Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the world of politics and law you watch me cover all the time on WGN-TV into the world of theater, my strong passion, which probably many of you would rather talk about anyway than politics and law. So let's get into it with not just one, but two shows. They both happen to be starring the same guy and a guy who I think considers Chicago his second home. That's just my view. Let's find out. The amazing actor and director, Ronnie Marmo, and playwright Ronnie Marmo joins us again, this time from the Los Angeles area. Hello, Ronnie, my friend. How are you?
Thank you, Paul. What an introduction. I appreciate you. Thank you very much.
So people who see you, of course, say, wait, that's the Lenny Bruce guy. You are the Lenny Bruce guy.
I am. And for the record, I do consider Chicago my second home.
Well, thank you. I kind of thought you did. I mean, you're here so much, and Lenny Bruce played here. I'm not a comedian. I'm Lenny Bruce played here so much. It is coming back. And we're going to talk about that. But the truth is, I'm guessing a lot of people who watch this podcast and they've seen you on it before, they know Lenny Bruce because they're theater people. So if you don't mind, I want to actually begin with the other play that is bringing you here, because this is new for Chicago, correct?
Yes, it's a premiere. Absolutely. It's called Bill W. and Dr. Bob.
Now, Bill W., I can remember when I was much younger, I was on a cruise ship, and they would do these announcements in the morning saying there's a meeting of the Friends of Bill W. at 10 o'clock in the whatever room. I didn't understand what that meant. I didn't know. I just, Bill W.'s got a bunch of friends here. I guess he's got a clique. People need to understand. I think a lot of people do know, and I certainly know now, but who was Bill W. and what is this reference to?
That's funny. That's great that that happened on the boat. That's amazing. Bill Wilson was one of the two founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, 1935. He and a gentleman named Dr. Bob came together and essentially started a revolution that changed the world, really, for drunks. And it was just, he was a stockbroker from New York, and Dr. Bob was a proctologist from Akron, Ohio. And these two
fill in your joke here.
Exactly. No one, you know, it's funny, in the literature, in AA, nobody really talks that what kind of doctor he was. So I like to bring it up. But anyway, Bill and Bob were two unlike, very different human beings. Bob was a much simpler man, and Bill was this hotshot, you know, stockbroker. And they came together at a moment when they needed each other. And it was a miracle, really. And
Before you leave that, Ronnie, wasn't it sort of fortuitous? It had to do with Bill W. making a phone call. They just happened to be connected with Dr. Bob. That almost didn't happen.
Yeah. So what happened was Bill W. was on business in Akron, and he was sober 5 months on his own. There was no AA, obviously. And he was sober 5 months, but he was standing, and the business deal he went to deal with fell apart. And his partners went back to New York, and they left him to pick up the pieces. And he was just standing there in the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel in Akron. And it was the day before Mother's Day, 1935. And he was staring at the bar, and he kept walking back and forth, trying to decide if he was going to go in there and have a drink. And something told him to go look at the church directory. And he wasn't a religious man at all, but there was 10 numbers on the church directory. And he literally picked up the phone and called all 10 numbers, and people were hanging up in his face because he was like, hey, I'm Bill, I'm an alcoholic. And they're like, click, click. And then the 10th person was a gentleman named Reverend Tunks. Reverend Tunks gave him the number of a woman named Henrietta Cyberling. Henrietta was the Goodyear, her father-in-law is Goodyear and Rubber Cyberling. He's the owner of Goodyear Rubber, which is just a side piece of information. And she said, I know just the man. She happened to be friends with Dr. Bob's wife. And it was this, like, 10 calls later, happenstance. He didn't give up. He kept walking towards the bar, coming back, making another call. And he heard a voice that said, I think you need another drunk to talk to. And literally before that, you know, they would throw away drunks in the 30s and before. They would tie them down in hospitals and just throw them away. And he heard that voice, and he kept going. And the last call put him in touch with Henrietta, which put him in touch with Dr. Bob. They met the next day. Bob was shaky and in terrible shape and said, I'll give you 15 minutes. And they ended up speaking for 6 hours. And it was
years thereafter.
Yeah. And up until they passed away. Right. So it was a miracle in a lot of ways. You know, it was pretty wild.
It does lead you to believe that, yeah, things happen for those people who believe in fate, or things happening for a reason. So this, first of all, and I think I know you well enough to know, and I think you're okay talking about this, but I mean, obviously this play has personal meaning for you. It would be strange for you to want to be in this and be a part of this if it didn't.
Absolutely. I've been sober since I was a kid. I had a crazy teenage life and, didn't have all that much supervision. So I was running around the streets, and the guys 4 years older than me were my, like, they were my mentors, if you will, And so eventually I got sober, and I never had a legal drink. I've been sober 33 years, and I got really lucky and very blessed, and I didn't squander a lot of time. Like a lot of people do, but I was always fascinated with the story, and I'm very much an active member in the 12 steps, and I'm very proud of that. And when I read the play, I thought, well, boy, we really need to take this to other people. And when I first did it, I've done the show 5 times in LA over 20 years. And when I first did it, I had a little, trepidation. I was like, well, I don't know if I should be telling this story. And then quickly, hundreds of letters came in from people, hundreds saying, I couldn't stay sober before, but now because of the play, I can. It simplified it. It made sense. Thank you. Thank you. And then I realized I went from like, should I do this to it's my responsibility to do it. And I'm proud of that. And because I'm sober, I feel like I direct it with a gentle touch. I feel like
Yeah.
people identify,
Well, and by the way, there's a companion piece to this which comes from these two guys. I mean, there's the folks who are in Alcoholics Anonymous, but then there's Al-Anon, the part for family members and other people. I mean, that part comes into my personal life with not being the alcoholic, but going to the Al-Anon meetings where I learned things such as, which surprised me, if you're in a relationship where somebody's an alcoholic, I learned from that. Be prepared to be collateral damage. The odds of you maintaining a relationship are almost impossible. It's very tough, not just for the alcoholic, but for the people in his or her life.
Oh, no doubt, Paul. And what's magical about this show is that you see the origins. You see the first moment when the three ladies, and by the way, it's not just ladies now, everybody, many people go to Al-Anon, but
Right.
you see the moment where it all happens and it's magical. And you go, oh my goodness, look what's happening. And there's a lot of, I love doing the show because in the audience, there's a lot of head nodding and a lot of elbowing, and there it is, it's happening, it's happening. And it's really wild. And I haven't met a human being alive that couldn't benefit from a 12-step structure. It doesn't have to be, and you don't have to have the ism. We're all humans. I always say we're spiritual beings suffering from the human experience, and so we need to, like, it's a guide for living for just about everybody on the planet. So it doesn't surprise me that you've checked it out,
Well, and what you said actually is part of an answer, I think, to my next question, because I'm thinking for people listening to us, you're going to have, there's several groups of people out there, but one of whom says, I am an alcoholic. I don't think I can go through this situation. I mean, depending on where they are in the process, but I can see somebody saying, this is too close to me. And the flip side of that, somebody who's saying, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have anybody in my life that I know of. Why do I care to see the place? So let's answer for everybody why you kind of just reflected on an answer, but talk more about that.
Well, what's beautiful about this show is I think some people may go, oh, alcoholics, it's going to be a big downer, It's a very funny, very inspirational, uplifting show. It's like, great. There's a ton of laughs. There's a lot of heart, a lot of passion. And I just think that, for those who don't know where they fit and all that, listen, I've had people come to the show and suddenly catch alcoholism. They're like, oh, wait a minute. Because the thing that's
Oh, not
interesting,
realizing they were, and then coming to realize it's them.
Like the thing about alcoholics and drug addicts and such, and gamblers and whatever your Jones is, whatever the ism is, the truth is like it's self-diagnosed. You have cancer, you have cancer. We know you have cancer. When you're an alcoholic, that's a self-diagnosis. And so I've met people 85 years old trying to put down the drink in the meetings who squandered their whole life. And then I've met people 20 years old who had did some emotional drinking, not too much, and realized, wow, I might be drinking for the wrong reason. So there's no, like, this is the criteria to become an alcoholic. That's why it's an interesting show. It's, I and he wouldn't mind me telling you this because he said it publicly. Joe Mantegna came to closing night in LA. And Joe sat in the audience. We had a talk back, and he had never seen the show. And we're very close. And I was like,
Yeah.
Joe, come to closing. So at the end, we had a talk back with the actors. So Joe raises his hand, and suddenly everybody realizes Joe Mantegna is there. Like, oh my God, oh. And Joe says, I'm 75 years old, and for the past 65 years, I never saw my father's point of view and his side of it. He goes, and now I understand from his perspective. I never saw it before until tonight. And he wept. And my wife had to go over and hold him. And he wept in front of the audience. It was so cathartic for Joe, saying, I never saw my dad's side of things. I never saw it from the alcoholic perspective. He had this other thought. And, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but
yeah,
he was really clear. And lots of people have that experience. And it's funny and it's charming and it's cool. And so it's a night out for sure in education.
So the other cool part of this, at least from my perspective, I used to be a very big supporter of Victory Gardens Theater, and I'm sure you realize this, but in going to the Biograph Theater, you are going into what was the Victory Gardens space, a theater company that was a magnificent company that just went, you know, just not around anymore. It kind of imploded, or at least appears to. But that being said, you're up in the Richard Christensen Theater. I was a donor to sponsor that theater when they first built it. And so you're in it. It's a fantastically intimate space. And I'm guessing both of your shows are up in that Richard Christensen Theater.
Yeah, and I love it. I feel so blessed to be going there. And the Victory Gardens is kind of changing their model, I think. I'm not sure if they'll do some producing. Maybe they will. But the Biograph is kind of opening up the doors for the community to produce. And I'm excited to be one of the first, if not the first, to do a real production. So the way the schedule is this. On Thursday and Friday nights, I'll be doing Lenny Bruce. Saturday and Sunday, I'm doing Bill W. Two shows on Saturday. So that's the schedule, generally speaking. There's a couple. I owe Houston a few performances, so I have to fly there in the middle of the run of Lenny. But that's the general layout of the schedule. And it's going to be a heck of a ride for me to do both. Both people mean so much to me. And to be in this position in my favorite city, it's pretty overwhelming, to be
honest. And the running dates take you into mid-April. I'm just sort of curious, is it an open run situation? I can't imagine you're not open to extensions. Maybe you're not.
Well, I've set up my life in a way where if we're blessed enough to need to do that, we will. Okay. Right now, I'm only doing Lenny Bruce for 8 performances. I've committed to 8 performances. The Bill W., I think I'm doing like 28 performances, something of that, 26 to 28.
So it's about the new show coming to people who haven't seen it before.
Yeah, I thought like I really want to present this because we're taking Bill W. Well, Lenny's been on a national tour for 3 years now since we left Chicago. And now we're doing the same. We have the same formula with Bill W. So I thought, well, why don't I go do a legit sit down outside of Los Angeles in my favorite city and see how long that runs. And from there, we're already booking cities around the country for Bill W. And in the meantime, there was, I can't believe the amount of people have told me, I missed the Lenny show. I was like, you missed it. I ran twice here for 6 months. How did you miss it? But they did. And so I thought, what a fun thing to do both of them
and rep and star in both. And by the way, I should note that in the Bill W., Lenny Bruce, of course, is a one-man show. It's just you. But in Bill W., and I thank you for this, you cast it with local Chicago actors, giving people here some work.
You know, I have two casts, full cast in L.A. ready to go. And I just thought, you know, I know what Chicago means and I know what the actors there, you know, how much they care about theater. And so, yeah, I cast the entire show. I even cast understudies for every role, including mine. And I guaranteed them performances and I normally don't do that. But I was like, I want to make it worth their time. If they're going to invest in me, I want to invest in them. And so, yeah. We have outside of me, we have all Chicago actors and understudies, except my wife, who's the hardest working person. She's the lowest understudy, so she's going to get to do a couple of shows, you know?
Okay. She gets the lowest.
I don't want to sleep on the couch. She deserves it. She's so good, you know?
I love it. So when you've done Lenny Bruce here, you've done it in very intimate spaces, but the last time we talked, you were about to do it in Skokie at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts, so we talked about it to let people know about it, but I haven't talked to you since that time. I'm curious what your reaction was to doing it in that kind of huge space versus because now you're going to take it back to the intimate space. Were you happy you did that? Did you have the same feelings about doing the role of Lenny Bruce when in that huge space?
Well, it was magical in Skokie. I loved it. Those people are amazing. We did two shows and we pretty much sold them both.
Yeah.
And I did a Q&A. I did a talk back after the shows and I thought, you know, maybe 50 people would stay. I walked out 5 minutes later and 800 people were sitting there waiting to have a talk back. Wow. 800. So the answer to your question, Paul, this might be shocking, but Since we've been on tour, I played 1,600 seats in Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
I played a dozen 1,000-seat houses. The sweet spot for me is around 500. I really like a good 500-seat house. But I made 1,600 seats work. I think Skokie was somewhere around 900, just under 900.
Yeah, that's about what they have, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it was, you know, Joe and I originally, when we took the show on the road, we thought potentially...
Joe Montaigne, for those who didn't
know. Joe Montaigne, my director. We were worried about it because we had played in 100-seat houses, 150. But we quickly realized the show doesn't change. It's just as good. The only difference is when I played Pittsburgh, 1,600 seats, it was a triple deck place. The only difference was is when you got a laugh on the third deck, it like rolled. My timing was a little different because I, you know, the show's very, it's just me. So there's a lot of timing involved.
But it's so tense, Ronnie. It's tense. There's moments. Look, you at some point you appear without clothes. It's part of what has to happen and all that. You're good in front of 800 people, 1,600 people when you're doing that?
You know, it's easier to take my clothes off in front of 1,600 people than one person.
Okay.
You know, there's something about that, you know. I'm a, yeah, I mean, you know, it's wild. It's like I drop myself in a Lenny and I feel like I'm picking up the pieces for him and getting to continue on something he didn't get to finish, maybe. And so
let's talk about Lenny Bruce we won't spend a lot. I think a lot of people know that show. And if not, they shame on them because they should know about this show and what you do. But talk about I'm Not a Comedian, Lenny Bruce, what it is, because then I want to bring these two shows together in our conversations. What will people see in Lenny Bruce, assuming they want to come and see you one night as Bill W., come the next night, see as Lenny Bruce?
That would be awesome. It's a one-man show. I take you back to the life of Lenny Bruce. It's not a stand-up routine. We do a lot of his comedy, but it's a tragedy, the show. And I call it the funniest tragedy you'll see. There's a ton of laughs, but it's a tragedy. And it's a 90-minute monologue. I've done 438 performances of this show. So it's really...
Sounds like you'll hit 450 when you're here, maybe.
438 right now, 438, 46 right now scheduled. So we'll see.
All right.
So I'd love to hit 450. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a very special production of if you like comedy, if you care about free speech, if you care about the First Amendment, if you care about cancel culture and your feelings on that. Lenny, in my opinion, was the first guy who got canceled, you know, but they killed him, which is a very different canceled. I mean, I'm so blessed. The First Amendment Association, the lawyers, they're coming together in Chicago at the end of April. They're having their yearly meeting, 150 First Amendment lawyers, and they asked me to come speak at the meeting at their conference. Yeah,
Lenny or as Ronnie?
No, as Ronnie, but they're all going to come see the show, and then we'll talk about it the next day. But anyway, yeah, it's a very special production. And I think it's an education everyone needs to have, you know, about Lenny. And if you like theater, it's a really nice piece of art. And Joe Montaigne did a beautiful job directing it. And I leave my soul on the stage, as you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so will audiences at some point get to see Joe in one of
these? I hope so. It's hard. Criminal Minds just got fired back up after the strike. And so he's back at work. I don't know. But he's still the biggest supporter of the show.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's magical. I mean, I've run into him not at your shows, but I just run into him in Chicago Theater. And it's just, there he is. You know, you just want to go up and say hi. Just a magnificent Chicago treasure. So it's no surprise that I see a connection between these two shows. Before I tell you what I see, I think you see this. Why do Bill W. and Lenny Bruce, not just because you do two shows, but I mean, there is a common thing. There is something going on in both of these shows for somebody to come and see both of them.
Yeah, Bill, let's start with Lenny. Lenny, he died of an overdose at age 40.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was a severe, he was an addict. And he never found recovery. And Bill Wilson was a fall in the gutter drunk who created Alcoholics Anonymous. And so in some ways, I always feel like for Lenny, it's like, that's why I'm very involved with the Lenny Bruce Memorial Foundation, because what we do with the money is when we raise money. And if you buy a ticket, you're already participating because I give a piece of the ticket to the foundation. And what we do is we put people through rehab who don't have money in Lenny's name. And so the idea that I play Lenny and Bill, there's no accident there. And I identify with both of them. You know, I identify with my demons from my past. And I also identify with being a very sober man who didn't just put down the drink, but I walked the walk and I and I lived the life of a sober guy. And so I think it's pretty wild to present both sides of the coin to you almost, you know.
How important for the Bill W. Show, how important, I mean, so if somebody just said, hi, Ronnie, I'm a Chicago actor. I want to play that role when you're not understudy, or I'll do it somewhere else for you. Do you have any question that somebody who doesn't have the history with alcoholism or know people in their family, can they pull it off the same way you're going to pull it off?
Well, the guy who's understudying me is not an alcoholic. What I always do whenever I cast the show is I first try to find sober people to get involved, because the rehearsal and the discussion looks a lot different. It's usually like, remember when you put down the drink and you were on that pink cloud? They go, I got it. Okay. But now, like, so, but with a non-sober person who doesn't understand it, they're like, why are you laughing when we do the line about chasing Anne around with a knife and then stabbing a tuna fish sandwich? How is that funny? And I go, to an alcoholic, it is. So it's there, you know, there's like a disconnect there. But what you hope is that you find a good actor who can explore themselves and on a larger level, discuss, like, you know, be able to perform, you know, any kind of hangups they may have had, or what disappointment looks like, what your joy looks like. And then you put in the material. So you don't have to be an alcoholic to do this show, but it's pretty damn special if you are. It's kind of like equivalent to me playing Lenny. When somebody plays Bill or Bob, who's sober, or Lois or Ann, who's an Al-Anon, it's almost like getting to play, you know, the hero. It's one for the obituary. It's like, I've had a good career and I played Bill Wilson. You know,
and for people who don't understand the Al-Anon or the 12-step program, I mean, I just recently got a phone call from a guy who used to work for me many years. I'm going to leave names out of this and everything else, but he worked for me. And it was not a great ending. To be honest with you, I loved him. He was great. So I don't have any bad memories. It didn't work out because there were things. He called me not all that long ago, and this is maybe 15, 20 years after we worked together. And he was at that step of the program where he had to apologize to those whom he had hurt in his life. And so he actually set up a time and we did a Zoom call. Didn't tell me why he was calling. I was like, just happy to hear from him. Wow, it's been so many years. And then he explained to me when we started that he was in the program and this is, and he needed to reach out and ask for my forgiveness for something he did, which I ended up saying, I don't even remember what you did, but you got it.
Oh, that's pretty. Well, first of all, it sounds like a guy who's working the program. Yeah. Not everybody comes in the program and works it. You know, I appreciate that. That's the ninth step, made direct amends to those we've harmed. The ninth and 10th step. You know, there's something freeing. Like you just said, like I made amends to people who didn't even remember what I was talking about. But it's something I carried with me. Mm-hmm. And it's something, so sometimes it's the small things that will keep you up at night, not the big. And so I love to hear that he did that, because that means he's on a path of recovery. And there's a freedom in that. There's a freedom in not carrying that stuff around anymore. You know, quick story. This guy, Steve O'Brien, came to see Bill W. 18 years ago, one of my productions. He came because he wanted to rent the theater to direct a play. Had no idea what he was seeing. He wanted to see the show, and he wanted to see the theater in all its glory. After the show, he had no idea he was seeing Bill W. He walked out into the parking lot, fell to his knees, and asked for help because he was an alcoholic and didn't even know the show he was seeing. And he's been sober ever since, and now he plays Bill Wilson for me.
Wow!
And the show saved his life, and so I have so many of those stories, and it's pretty magical. And the fact that I get to play Bill is like, it's like playing Lenny. I mean, I get it's unbelievable.
Now, you didn't write the Bill W. Show, so can you tell us a little bit about the writers of it?
Yeah, Samuel Shem and Janet Suri wrote this. They're a husband and wife team. They're professors in Boston. And Shem is famous for, he wrote a book called The House of God. I don't know if you know the book.
I don't, but
if you look him up, you might know some of his writing. So they're not typical playwrights, but they wrote this play many years ago, and I've engaged them. And now we have the sole rights to the play in the country, or the world for that matter. And so we have a whole plan to roll it out, because we want to bring it to people. We think it's really important, and it's very special. And
through there, ever, are you able to reach, I mean, there are so many chapters of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, and those are two different things. I mean, there's the family members and the, you know, but are you reaching them here? Will they know you're here with this play?
You know, it's a funny balance because you don't want to go run around promoting a play in an AA meeting. You really don't want to.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's right. It's got to be sensitive.
That it's a sensitive balance, and I am sensitive to that. So, you know, you put it out the best you can, and you hope that the people who hear about it are supposed to hear about it. That's why, you know, we hired a great press team to let them know it's out there in the world. There are a couple of sober folks involved in the cast, which I'm sure they're telling their friends and spreading the word. And you just kind of see what it becomes. You said, are we open to an extended run? You know, if the thing catches on and people keep coming, you know, we're at a place where it's like, we just don't want to lose money. But if people are showing up and it's kind of taking care of itself, then it's worth doing. Yeah. I mean, you know, so yes, we just hope it catches on. And there's no perfect formula because you have to be kind of sensitive about it.
For Lenny Bruce, the talkbacks make perfect sense for a host of reasons. Everything from people who are now fascinated by Lenny Bruce. And I have to say, for those who watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, yes, Lenny Bruce is in that as well, the Lenny Bruce character. Do not expect to have the same experience when you watch that show as they're going to get with you. This is night and day. And both probably very true to who Lenny Bruce was. You're friendly with his daughter, Kitty. Are both portrayals of Lenny Bruce right on? I know yours is for her.
You know, it's hard to say. I only saw a few episodes of Maisel. It's hard to say. I love that show. I think it's cool. But it's a different thing. You know, it's like a couple of reviews I read about the show referred to him as her fairy godfather. So like he's the fairy godmother to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Lenny was there's nothing fairy godmother about him in real life. And so how do I don't know the answer other than to say, I think Luke Kirby really captured his charm and his energy at times in his life. But I don't know. You know, what we're doing is a really raw version of Lenny at his core. And so.
Yeah, they may both be accurate, but they're very different experiences for people. And the thing I want to ask you, well, what started before that, I went to that question was, you do the talkbacks after Lenny. That makes sense because people are interested in First Amendment rights and all of that. Would love to be there when the First Amendment lawyers are there. But that being said, do you do talkbacks with Bill W? And if you do, that's got to be a very different and almost risky experience, emotional experience for people who may want to then engage.
Well, I told you what happened with Joe. I mean, you know, that was really...
Exactly. But so was that because there was a talk back whenever, or that was just Joe and you?
No, that was a talk back. He said that in front of the entire audience.
Okay.
He said that in front of the entire audience. It was packed. And he just said, I never realized what my dad went through. I didn't understand it until tonight.
But that's a very different kind of talk back then. Oh, tell me about this, Lenny Bruce. And then did he do that? That's my point. Bill W., you're getting people who are going to then have to get raw about their own lives.
Well, it's interesting. Like, listen, I want to be clear. The show is really great for theater goers. If you love theater, you'll also appreciate this piece. It's great in that way. I don't want people to think you have to be sober to enjoy yourself.
Absolutely, right.
You don't have to be. But sometimes the talkbacks turn into a bit of a meeting. You know, somebody will say, you know, I'm 10 years, I'm 15, I'm 12, I got 90 days. Everybody will clap. It's that kind of thing. It's really quite wild. It's the only show that I've ever done that we don't do talkbacks every night. But what I do is I say to the actors, look, I know you take your bow. I know you're supposed to go change and then come back. And whoever's out there is out there. I said, don't go change. I want you to walk right in the lobby and I want you to connect with these people. You don't know what's going to happen. Mm. And it comes this receiving line with the actors and there's hugs, there's tears, there's joy, there's laughter. And the actors are like, oh my goodness, I had no idea what I was stepping into. And so the magic of what happens on the outside is wild. And so I literally tell them, get off stage and walk right to the lobby. I don't care if you have your 1930s costume on. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because I don't want you to pass up this opportunity to see what this show is doing for people.
And that's a fantastic point because that obviously informs their own performance. And so the next time they take on stage, they know what they're dealing with. But I'm glad to hear you are doing the talkbacks. And I'm also glad to reemphasize what we did say earlier in the interview. This is about theater. You love theater. Go see the show. And I wanted to address that early on because there will be people who will make some assumptions about who should go and who not. This is for everybody.
It's totally for everybody. It's an inspirational, uplifting, fun story. There's so many laughs. It's a great piece of history. There's not a human being alive that hasn't been affected in some way. But I want you to know it's not a big downer. I think when people hear the title, they go, oh, I don't know, it's going to be a downer. It's not. It's fun. It's over the top at times. The characters really bring this thing to life. It's very special. You know, it's really cool. I'm really proud of it. And I think sometimes, you know, I've been backstage and all of a sudden the entire audience breaks out in the Serenity Prayer and the actors are going, what's going on out there? And I go, don't worry about it. Just go out and leave your heart on the stage. It's the only play you're ever going to do that they love you before they bought the ticket.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But the savvy Chicago audience is always that way. I find you guys to always be like, we love you. We support you. We bought the ticket, but now don't dumb it down for us. You guys really know your theater. But it's the only city I've ever been to where I feel like they're like, let's go. We're ready for you. We want you to be great. And we expect it.
Yeah.
Cutting corners. So
you know, that comment is so important. And by the way, you, as you know, many people who bring their plays to Chicago, especially before Broadway, they all say the same thing about Chicago. It knows what it wants in theater. It knows what it expects. It's discriminating in taste. And you, as an actor and a director, and you learn from Chicago audiences. We got some of the greatest critics in the world here. Chris Jones, I think, is one of the best.
Oh, he's one of the best. And he's been so supportive of me. I mean, he did a beautiful piece in the Tribune last week.
Yeah.
We're coming back. He and Rick Hogan. Rick Hogan is our angel. He's, you know, one of the great writers for the Tribune. He saw the play closing night in New York. He saw Lenny, my closing night. And he's like, how do we get this to Chicago? And the rest is history. Rick was a real big part of that. And he still is.
It's beautiful. Well, you're coming to the Victory Gardens Theater, which you've been in there, right? You're in the space? Been in the space.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
So you're going to love it. And there's also plenty of places. If you like burgers and your wife, you've got plenty of places to go to have some burgers and fries in the neighborhood.
Well, I know a couple of restaurants. There was a fire there. And Chris Jones and I had a great call one day. And he said, yeah, the neighborhood could use a little bit of energy. And so when I brought both shows back, you know, I really, part of my thinking really was going to the Biograph, to the gardens, was because I want to help revitalize the neighborhood. I mean, that's an incredible neighborhood, and it feels like it needs a little attention.
It needs it. You got the Apollo across the street trying to make a comeback. It is time. It's a fantastic neighborhood. I want to give the websites. I'll put it, people will see it on the webpage, but LennyBruceOnStage.com and Bill and Dr. Bob on stage.com. That means the tickets are really coming through your organization entities. That's how you know to make the donations and all the things you're going to be doing.
Yeah. No, everything goes through us. And just to be clear, it's Bill W. and Dr. Bob on stage.
Oh, I'm sorry. There you go. Just had cataract surgery.
Make sure. Bill W., Dr. Bob on stage, Lenny Bruce on stage. Yeah, we handle all of it, the producing, just so we can make sure everybody gets what they have coming to them.
Right.
And we're in total charge of it. So we're...
Ronnie Myron, my friend, I'm thrilled you're coming back to Chicago. I'm going to come see you, and I'll look forward to it. And hey, and just break legs every night in Chicago. This town loves you. We look forward to having you back.
Paul, thank you for your constant support. You're a real gentleman, and I'm glad we didn't talk politics today. I'm sick of it.
Well, let's start now.
No. I'm over it.
You'll see me on Channel 9 when you get here. Thank you, Ronnie. I appreciate you.
Thank you, pal.